Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Brawley Darbin, in St. Louis, Missouri. And on the other line, joining us all the way from England, is Liam Ward. Welcome back, Liam. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm all right, thank you, my friend. How are you?
You know, we've seen better days as West Ham fans, haven't we? It's been a funny old, 5 weeks since the end of the lockdown games, the end of last season, and we finally kicked off and had our first Premier League game against Newcastle, which we'll get into in a little bit. But it has been a funny old few weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah, never quite, is it? Even when you think it's starting to settle down, it never, ever with West Ham seems to be just a normal quiet period.
We never do anything the easy way, it seems like. Everything has to be painful and drawn out, and this transfer window leading up to this season is no exception to that. I did want to say and send my condolences out to my regular co-host Tony. His dog crossed the Rainbow Bridge last night. We were going to record last night, but his dog sadly passed away, so I just wanted to send my condolences out to him and his family, because I know losing a dog is just one of the worst things that people go through. It's a really sad time, so I did want to mention that and just say sorry to Tony and his family. Moving on to, well, we did have our first game, didn't we? It was ended West Ham 0, Newcastle 2. Just an absolutely blah, dreadful, boring performance from West Ham. Liam, what were your overriding thoughts on the game, and what did you come away with the game as your main takeaways?
Overriding thoughts from the games were probably we need players, we need them fast, and we need them right now. It was almost exactly identical to that Burnley game that we lost, where we lost 2-0 to Burnley. On the back end, where it just seemed on the Moors, we just seemed to have an ability to just have a turgid performance every, 3-4 games, maybe 5 games. Mm-hmm. That just one of those will just be an absolute stinker. I mean, Rice was awful, and he is allowed to have bad games. He is a young player. But it was quite shocking to see how bad he was as well, and he's just come back from
international duty. With Declan, I think it shows how reliant we are on him, where he didn't really train with us during the off season, when the players got brought back from training, because I guess he had a late holiday or something. I don't know what exactly happened with him, but it sounded like he was quarantining for an extra week or 2 weeks or something, and then he goes away on England with England and plays in both games with England, and he didn't really get a proper week of training before the Newcastle game. So I can totally understand him having a bad game. And I think you said it right. I think you said it, we should forgive him, and he is allowed to have a bad game as a young player. But I think if under normal circumstances with a normal team, Declan Rice isn't playing that game. He's coming off the bench. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, it just shows how desperate we are for him to be in the team.
Yeah, I totally agree. It shows our desperation that we have to rely on a 21-year-old kid.
I didn't mean to cut you off either, so go ahead on your thoughts.
No. I totally agree. You're only just going to say what I pretty much was thinking. Awful performance. And I think, like most of us, I'm seriously worried about the season. I think we could be in for a bumpy one. Might be a bit of an understatement.
Well, especially with the run of games that we have coming up. Well, we have, I think, 6 or 7 of the top 10 from last season coming up, and it's just an awful run to start the season. And when you were looking at the fixtures, if you were going to pick a game where we're going to pick up points, it's this one, right? I mean, this is the only one of our opening 8 games that I think we had a shot at winning, because next on Saturday we have Arsenal away, and then Wolves at home, Leicester away, Spurs away, Man City at home, Liverpool away. I mean, where on earth do we pick up any points? Last season, against those same 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 opponents, we picked up a combined 0 points. where do you see the points coming from? I mean, is it going to be a case of, what was it? Crystal Palace, would they lost their first eight games? Was it under Frank de Boer? Is it?
Yeah, I think it was less. I think they sacked him after about five, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was a crazy, crazy. I think their fixtures probably weren't as bad as that, and they
They weren't.
actually ended up staying up comfortably that season. But are we going to get any results from that run of fixtures? I have a tough time believing so.
We'll be lucky to get a point if we're lucky. Genuinely, I think it's just there's almost too much to untangle, and there's problems left, right, and centre with the team, which is why it was so important trying to win on Saturday, because that was a winnable game.
100%. And what it showed, Newcastle improved from last season. Their signings improved their squad. Callum Wilson, proven goal scorer in the Premier League. Yes, he has some injury problems, but for £20 million, a statement of intent from their owner, Mike Ashley, said, "I want a proven goal scorer." He only had they had two fit strikers, who, and one of them's not even really a striker. Well, I guess you could say three if you count Dwight Gayle. I'm not sure if Dwight Gayle's even there anymore, if I'm honest. But he had Andy Carroll and Joelinton, and he goes out and gets Callum Wilson. I think that's a great signing for them. And
It was great business.
sure enough, Callum Wilson against West Ham pops up with a debut goal. Shocker. I should have I should have put some money on him to be the first goal scorer, honestly. And I'm going to ask you a question about betting here in a second, and I want to get to that a little later, but. And then another new signing in Jeff Hendricks come up with an absolutely beautiful goal. It was a
Oh,
really,
gorgeous.
really well taken goal. I should say I was actually driving down while I was riding. I wasn't driving. I was riding down to see my local team, St. Louis FC, play away at Louisville. So I didn't actually get to like watching at home or at a pub where I actually could analyze the game. I had the game on my iPad, service was going in and out, and I got to see most of the game and see what the goals and what actually happened. But I should say, I don't think I got the best analytical view of the game, so I'm kind of relying on you, Liam, for that. But I did get to go see my team, St. Louis, play. They lost 3-0 away in Louisville, so it was a great day for me to lose 5-0 on aggregate and
Oh,
spend seven, actually closer to 8 hours in the car on the day because we just drove down and back. But I do want to say, if I put out a tweet that said this, but if any Americans over here are thinking of going to see a game in Louisville's new stadium, it is an absolutely spectacular stadium, and it is probably by far and away the best second division stadium for soccer in the United States. Yeah, highly recommend it, and I put some pictures up on my Twitter feed. So if you're interested in seeing them, go check that out at Brawley Darbin. Now to get back to the game, besides the Callum Wilson and Jeff Hendrick goals, did you take anything away from West Ham players? Was there a West Ham player? I know we said Rice had a disappointing game. Were there any players that you did think had a particularly good game for West Ham, or was it all just terrible across the board?
thought Ryan Fredericks wasn't awful, which is I normally single him out. I think he actually did okay, and at the very least tried. One thing you said about Newcastle players, so they signed Ryan Fraser, Jamal Lewis, they signed Callum Wilson and Jeff Hendrick. Am I missing any out? It's kind of that was the main bulk of their summer.
Yeah, and Frazier actually
I think Lewis.
scored tonight, so
They did. So that's what, five players? That for a combined, I think Lewis was about 12 million left back. Wilson was about 20. So that's about 30 million, you'd say, all in all. So why are we bidding 30 million for Tarkowski, who X has said doesn't want to come to us, that Burnley are holding up for 50, got no reason to sell, when you could assign those five players, and I think all of them would have gone straight into the first team. This is what I don't understand, and that's the difference between the two teams. You had one. There is no team on earth that should finish a season and not strengthen. I don't care who you are. Ferguson would constantly improve because that was the whole point of that year on year, that you refresh the players, you keep everyone competitive, you move the ones out that are getting older. Almost every good football team on earth does it. Every good sports team on earth does it. You need new blood, fresh blood every season. The one thing that you might say is Liverpool, well, they did win the league at a canter. I've won Champions League with that group, but I think I remember reading that X kind of said that, the reason that we didn't signing players. We didn't have targets drawn up. We didn't have money, and we didn't know who was kind of coming and going. That is just disgusting, Bernie. That is absolutely disgusting. How can you not know?
It boggles
who your
the
targets
mind.
Are?
Yeah.
I don't think you saw that in the performance. That it just looked like a group that had been together for too long. We've got the same left back pairing, Matawaku and Creswell, that we have done for the past five seasons. So once again, you know what's going to. I'll tell you the problems at left back that we'll have. We could have told you that 3 years ago.
Yep.
Which is better now. It's, again, we're in the same position, striker wise, exact same. Why are we playing a winger up front? Who's quite not like. I think remember people saying, "Oh, we had a good end to the season last season. We won three games out of 18."
Yeah,
well, I don't.
No, I totally agree with you. And I thought people were getting way too excited about the way we ended last season. And I think me and you were far more down to earth about the because I was seeing people like saying that we need to just David Moyes is the man. He's going to take us forward for sure. And like we were starting to like, okay, there were glimpses of good things, but I was never ready to say David Moyes is the man. I still don't think David Moyes is the man to take us to the next level. I think he's a cheap appointment, and he will probably keep us up. I mean, I don't even like it's I don't know.
It's like a Pulis and an Allardyce where they've right. never been relegated. You endure it. The guy's actually gone down with Sunderland.
Yep.
And like, again, you just don't know. Like I've said this for a while, and I think I've referred to this on the last pod. It could be a situation like a Villa or Sunderland where they've scrapped for years, and then one season the trapdoor opens and that's it. You get punished for your mistakes. I don't want it to be that season. I might have said in a bit of like passion or emotion before where I said, oh, we should go down. I actively don't want to go down, but it might be that our time's up. I don't know what you think looking at that team, but that's the sort of performance that I got.
I could easily see us going down this season. I'll put it that way. And I predicted us to finish 16th or 17th on the last show with Dave and X. And by the way, thank you to everyone for listening to that episode because it was one of our highest total listens that we've ever had. And we always thank Dave and X for bringing a bunch of listeners over, and we really appreciate that, and hopefully you enjoyed it. But I think we'll finish. I'm hopeful. What's isn't that sad? I'm hopeful that we finish 16th or 17th. Like that would be it's not acceptable either. Like I'm caught in like two different minds. Like I'm so torn. Like I would be like, I'm not happy with just staying up. I'm not. But at the same time, if you offered me 16th or 17th this season, I don't know. I might take it because I can't. I'm struggling to find three teams that I think are going to be worse than us. So, man, like it's so depressing. Everything West Ham right now is depressing, and we still, as of September 15th, we're recording this September 15th at 4 p.m. Central U.S. time, 10 p.m. UK time. We still haven't made a single signing this window. Yes, we signed. We made Thomas Suchek permanent. I'm sick of people saying like, "Oh, that's a signing. That's a signing." He's a player that was here last year, so therefore it's not improving the team. He's a great player. Don't get me wrong. I'm really excited about Thomas Suchek. We haven't made. I think as of the last show, we were still the only team in the Premier League not to make a single signing, and I believe that's still the case. Obviously, it would still be the case today. How on earth can you go into a season where you struggled mightily and not improve the squad? You said it. It's a recipe for disaster. It really is.
Yeah, and then when everyone around you improved as well.
Everyone.
So everyone that struggled around us last year.
We sold our second best young player to a relegation rival for not that much money. 18 million pounds is not that much money in today's market. I mean, if Grady Diangana and West Brom stay up and West Ham go down. I don't understand the thinking behind it. I get that they're crying poverty and the funds that they expected to be there at the beginning of last season weren't there this year because of COVID. But when you look around the league and we're supposedly the 16th, 17th richest, quote unquote, richest club in the world, And we're crying poverty and we can't spend any money. Come on now, I think that's appalling, and that's a lot of people, as you can see on Twitter. I saw that. Did you see that graphic with the Athletic Hopometer.
Yeah, that hypometer,
It's spot on, 100%. West Ham, rock bottom in fan voting optimism going into the new season. West Ham, 20th out of 20 at 8.8%. And West Brom right above that at 37%. I mean, he got it spot on. I mean, literally no West Ham fan right now is happy and looking forward to the season. I'm normally, and Tony really is. Tony predicted us to finish 10th on the last pod. I thought he was getting a little ahead of himself there, but
You
you
think
can't.
particularly as finished 10th?
He did, yeah.
I don't remember hearing that.
You can't blame him for being optimistic because he's normally an optimist going into a season. But yeah, on our little prediction at the end of the podcast last week, he predicted us to finish 10th. He did say if we can get Haller going, and but he I said put it on paper. He said 10th, so that's where he predicted us to end
Is that
up.
10th in the championship next year?
Yeah, maybe so.
I don't like back to performance. It just was everything that is probably wrong with the club was wrong on the pitch. We rely on a 34-year-old playing in behind a striker. He's not a striker. Loads of like dross in the team now. Loads of bloat, and it just looked disjointed. No one really looked like what they wanted to be there, and probably all looked a bit gutted that their mate Dean Garner had left.
I couldn't agree more. Now that we've seen or heard, I heard, I didn't really get to see the game, but Sebastian Haller scored twice against Charlton today. I think he has to start next week. I think you paid £45 million for a striker and we're playing a winger over him. I get it at the end of last season, look, because you had to get results, but I think now you have to get Seb Haller a run on the team. You absolutely have to get Antonio playing in just behind him or on the wing. Get him back in his normal position. But I thought Antonio didn't look like a striker against Newcastle. I don't know if you agree with that. I think he scuffed a few chances that a regular striker would probably score. I'm not trying to take anything away from the guy. He was our best player at the end of last season. His goals were vital to keeping us up. I don't want to make it sound like I'm slating Antonio at all, but facts are facts. He's not a striker. He isn't. And we have a guy on the bench that we paid an absolute ton of money for, you got to play him. I think you have to now. I think now is the time. I don't know if you agree with that.
Again, it just I can agree more with. But we've got someone playing out of position, and then you've got someone that's experienced in that position on the bench. Play one in playing both in the right positions. Why is that such a difficult thing? Problems galore, I think, is the there are almost so many problems with the club. You could do a whole separate podcast just about those problems,
Yeah.
and going through them all individually. I think it would take up 3 4 hours.
Probably so.
Just had a look at the press conference from tonight. David Moyes says that Jack Wilshere rolled his ankle in training, hence his absence for West Ham tonight.
Oh. Do you think that he's lying and we're trying to get rid of him like X says, or do you believe that he probably actually did injure his ankle?
I did read, to be fair, that in that same press conference, I asked him, "Is Wilshere going to be there, be at West Ham this season?" He says, "I don't know." They've got to be looking at shifting him out now because what an atrocious! I mean, we've made some bad decisions, but that I mean is one of the worst ones. Is giving a guy that hasn't played much football a 3 year contract, even if it was pay as you play, you kind of get it. Like kind of Carroll's done with Newcastle, where they kind of had a like a 1 year deal. I think that they refreshed, or
Yeah.
kind of a 2 year deal that was kind of rolling, something like that. Why put someone on a 3 year deal of 100 grand a week? It is mind boggling.
I was actually excited about Jack Wilshere. I was really, really excited about him. And that is a problem with me is I do love these, for some reason, I love these players coming from teams like Liverpool, Arsenal, Man United, Man City. Like, for some reason, I really do get excited when West Ham signed those guys. Like, I was so excited to sign Andy Carroll. But rarely does it ever work out for you, especially when the guy can't stay fit for half a season, a quarter of a season. And I think it's proven now that it was a terrible, terrible acquisition. And the fact that we're trying to get rid of him on a free with 1 year left on his contract, or the face the possibility of buying out his contract, it's a pretty sad sad state of business, and I'm sure David Sullivan and the board are going to blame Pellegrini and Husilios for that, but it ultimately comes down to them. And just what an abysmal 2 years Jack Wilshere has had at the club. Do you have anything that you wanted to say about the Newcastle game before we move on? I did want to say we did hit the bar twice in the first half. They weren't like thunderbolts off the bar, though. Like, my Newcastle friends were trying to tell us, I think Newcastle fans are pessimistic as is right now, because like they all were thinking that we were going to win, and I thought there was not a chance in hell that West Ham were winning that game. And I couldn't believe that they were. And I had someone trying to tell me, one of my Newcastle friends is like, oh, I think I can see West Ham nicking this in the second half when it was 0-0. And I was like, what game are you watching? Because they were like, oh, you hit the bar twice. I was like, man, it wasn't like we thunderbolted it off the bar. It was kind of, I think, two shots that were looping that were probably going to go over anyway that just grazed the bar. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts before we moved on?
I think hitting the bar twice probably flattered us.
No, very, very much so. That's exactly what I thought. One question I had for you, and I think I shared it with you guys in the group chat, but I tried a little reverse psychology, and I wanted to get your opinion on whether it was sacrilege to bet against your team. So I made a bet the night before the West Ham game. The price for Newcastle winning that game was so high, I could not wrap my brain around. Like, has no one been paying attention to what West Ham has done? The bookmakers' odds were going higher and higher and higher on Newcastle to win, and I could not believe it. So in American terms, the line that I got in at was, I believe, plus 285, which is almost 3-1. It's almost 3-1 in terms of your guys' odds over there. And so I said, well, screw it. I'm going to put a $50 bet, $50 on Newcastle to win, because that's how confident I was that we would lose that game. And people, some of my Newcastle friends were telling me they didn't think that was a good bet. I just couldn't believe it. But do you think, is it sacrilege to make a bet against your own team? Because I will say, it was extremely weird watching it, and not, like, I did want West Ham to win, don't get me wrong, but I wasn't gutted that we were going to lose. I was actually okay with losing a game for once, because it meant I would almost triple my money on that bet. What do you think?
I've never done it. I've been tempted so many times to bet against us. And, like, for example, I've seen Sky bet about Fulham, West Brom and West Ham to go down at 22-1, which I think is outrageous odds as a free. And I'm telling all my mates to lump on that. I saw it in pre-season, we were about 6-1 to go down, which I thought was excellent odds. It's now down to about 2-1, I think, purely because of the first game of the season.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I've never done it. I don't have an issue with people doing it, but I can't ever bring myself to do it.
I don't blame
basically
you.
Basically me.
Yeah, it was an extremely weird, weird feeling watching the game, and I don't know if I'll ever do it again. Although, I am kind of tempted again this week with Arsenal coming up, because as the line sits right now, it was minus 180 for Arsenal to win the game, which is, I don't know what the odds were turned. It's basically, Arsenal are favorites, but they're not favorites by a mile. And I'm almost tempted to throw some money on that again, but I, at the same time, I don't want to, because like I said, it was a really bizarre feeling watching that game and being okay with West Ham losing. So yeah, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. You haven't done it personally. That makes a lot of sense. I don't know that I'll ever do it again unless I'm very confident, like I was again, that and there was a good price on it. But I'm going to put a poll out on Twitter, so if you're listening to this, go and vote on the Twitter poll. Is it sacrilege for a fan to make a bet against their own team? Because I am curious to hear what the thoughts are on that. But I think people will understand at this day and time why I did that and why it was a smart investment. David Moyes, I want to talk about him. The lineup, would you have picked a different lineup? I know we kind of talked about Sebastian Haller and that game, but is he getting the tactics right, or is he just going, did he just revert back to what worked at the end of last season? So he said, I'm just going to go with that. Because I will say, like you said, I did actually approve of the Fredericks decision, because of that game where Saint-Maximin tore a new one into Pablo Zabaleta. I thought you have to match pace with pace, and I don't know that Ben Johnson has an absolute ton of pace. So I was happy with that, but I mean, overall, right now, if the board wasn't in this position and under normal circumstances, are you sacking David Moyes and bringing someone else in? Just what are your thoughts?
I don't think David Moyes should ever. I feel sorry for him a little bit. I don't think he should have ever been at the club, though. Really, should he? I think he looks noticeably older, like Bilic did.
Yeah.
When you know that Bilic did a year where he aged, and now he looks really a lot like younger and healthier at West
West
Brom.
Brom, yeah.
There has to be a lot of issues he's got to deal with. I think Pellegrini said today. To a report that he was glad that he doesn't have to work with the West Ham owners anymore. He's just a bit more relaxed now because it must be horrendous. And he's probably putting out four or five different fires that we don't even know about in that team. I'm not his biggest fan. I don't think he should be. I've never looked at a club like West Ham and thought that we should be employing someone like a David Moyes. Not because. Like turn your nose up to be snobby, but it would be nice that that when clubs like Leicester, Southampton, and Wolves have found managers like well, Brendan Rodgers, appreciate his manager at Liverpool before Nuno Sanchez, who's done an excellent job at Wolves. Southampton have brought in a Pochettino, who got to a Champions League final, and Ronald Koeman, who's the Barcelona manager, and have gone on to those things. And I've always thought we should go for managers that are up and coming. Not on the way out, if that makes sense.
Yep.
But he's here, can't complain about it. He's in the job. I don't agree with the Antonio Haller situation. The thought he doesn't know, really know where to play four nows.
No, he has no idea where to play for now.
And Noble, why he is playing in behind the striker at 34, I'll never know.
Well, I think the only reason he is because that game against Norwich that we won 4-0, it worked brilliantly in that game, and he's just playing it again and again and again and again, trying to get it to work like that. Unfortunately, not every team is Norwich in the Premier League, but I genuinely believe he's going with what worked close to the end of last season, just hoping it works again. Genuinely. Well, what else can you do, really, though? At the same time, it's the same squad of players that he had last season, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but it's the same squad as last season. I haven't gotten any help from the board. So I'm gonna go with what I know for a fact worked at the end of last season. And
I find the people referring back to the Norwich result weird. I appreciate we beat them 4-0, but Norwich had conceded
oh,
75 goals
terrible.
and scored 26 goals in the league.
They'd given up.
Yeah, and they, yeah, and they, I think they won five games all season. And I find it weird because I remember someone going, "Oh, Antonio scored four in Norwich, and like he should always be playing there." And I was like, "He scored four against a team that is." Down in history is one of the worst Premier League teams
Ever.
any of us have ever seen. So why? I don't really understand that argument that we beat an awful, awful Norwich team away from home to pretty much confirm us to start. Like that's not something that can probably be looked at any context. I'd probably look at that Villa game, last game of the season that we played, and we played awfully, where the alarm bells should have been ringing
Yeah.
for Moyes rather than that Norwich game that quite a lot of people seem to refer back to.
I'm still flabbergasted that we haven't brought anyone in. And I'm sure
Yeah.
Moyes can't be happy about that. I know he's saying all the right things out in public and out to the media right now, but surely he has to be disappointed. I know he doesn't really have any power in the situation. Like he was, no other team even approached him to come in and to manage them, I don't believe, since he was sacked last time with us. And he's on relatively low wages comparative to what Pellegrini was on. And he's probably one of, if not the lowest paid manager in the Premier League, if I had to take a stab at it. I don't know that factually, so please don't quote me on that. But David Moyes doesn't have any power in the situation. And I'm sure he was told probably when he was rehired that, if you keep us up, we're gonna back you, we're gonna support you. And that has not been the case. I will say, I mean, they did buy Thomas Souček and Jarrod Bowen, and that those were two players that he wanted supposedly. But to go through three quarters of a transfer window, a summer window, where every single team around you is strengthened, and you haven't done a single thing in the market. In fact, you've sold players, and you've gotten worse, and you've lost depth. Surely he has to be disgusted. And I know X came on the show last week, and he said he reluctantly approved the sale because he wanted to have money to spend versus not being able to bring anyone else in and strengthen the defense. I'm just sitting here. I think David Moyes has to be disgusted, whether he can say it or not. I just think he, like most of the West Ham fans, are upset at what's going on. I'm hoping and I'm thinking, but I think surely he can't be happy.
Well, I mean, Kerbishley left because they sold, I think it was Anton Ferdinand and George McCartney.
Yeah, I believe that was it. Yep.
And Bellamy, I think, maybe. And Kerbishley resigned. So I think you've got Moyes has to take a bit of the blame that he sanctioned that. Even if he's you can reluctantly do anything, or you can outright refuse and say no.
Yeah.
And to reluctantly accept, why would you think they would give you money anyway? Because there's no evidence that's shown that. Where are we spending this money? Like the Tarkowski situation. Is it transfers are a really simple conversation though. How much is he worth to you? Well, he's worth 50 million to us. Right, we bid 30. No, well, that's way too low. But with West Ham, it's like, we'll bid 19, we'll bid 22, we'll bid 26. Every time, they go, the asking price is 50. Every other club, just to go, what's your asking price? 30, 40, cool, we'll pay that. That's the player we want. Or, right, it's 40, we'll give you 35, the rest in installments. And I'm not saying it's like, I live in a world where, you know, it's like, I believe, like Football Manager and FIFA are the way that people do transfers. It just doesn't seem to be like this, where with West Ham, they will try at a ridiculously low price. They'll just get told no, and then that's 3 weeks of a window wasted that the other club, the club they're trying to buy from, just goes, no, he's worth more than that to us. So, like, if it was the case that the Ngannou situation was done to reinvest in the team, they would have had a list of targets drawn up. The moment that's gone through, they would have started working on these targets and we would have signed players by now. That's what I believe. That there would have been a clear plan of, and they wouldn't have got 18 million for him. They would have got upwards of 25. Because that's what they would have thought, right, we need to invest 25 back in. I mean, for a club to have been in the Premier League for 10 years and try and claim they have a zero transfer budget is a total farce, for one. I don't even want to get into that. I'm kind of talking about this window that and Moyes sanctioned that, and I think that's really disappointing. I think it's gotten down in a lot of people's estimations for that. If he had stood up for himself, even if he'd been the worst manager in West Ham's history, he could have gone down as a legend.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If he'd made it outrightly known publicly, or again, I appreciate he's got like a livelihood and a job. If he'd come out publicly and said, "I don't want to sell Dean Garner," he would have gone down as a legend. But he sanctioned it. And for me, that is also very disappointing.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we can move on. The next thing I have on my list written down here is just one simple thing, and that's hashtag GSB out. And we've ended up trending on Twitter several times, actually, and been on the top five in the UK. Overall, we know your thoughts. Anyone who's listened to the show knows that you and I both can't stand Gold, Sullivan, and Brady at this point, especially you. You're much more vocal than I am about it. Do you think this GSB out trend on Twitter is working? Is it pushing the owners towards a potential sale? We've heard that there is an American consortium or an American buyer, potentially NFL based, that's interested. I no official bid as of today. X has said, officially, there is no formal bid that's been launched and rejected. There is no formal bid launch. So I think people are getting a bit ahead of themselves. But just quite simply, is GSB out working in your eyes?
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. So I think it is. I don't mean, you're seeing it even if you look at it on the level of the stories that are going down in the media. You're now seeing the stories about the interest that they've taken on the club that have been paid to them.
Yeah,
you know, I've seen stories about their, you know, how much money they've put into the club compared to everyone else. That Swiss ramble, like all of those graphs that came out. I'm not going to pretend to understand financial stuff, but the impression I got from that is they're just awful in terms of like, money investment and take money out of the club. The fact that Karen Brady's one of the highest paid directors. All of this stuff, I think, is really good publicity because it makes journalists think, hang on, well, I need to look into this more and keep looking into this more because this has got traction. To sit and be quiet about it and not kind of, again, levels of protest and kind of what you consider protest, what I'd consider protest, to just sit and be quiet, I don't think it helps us anymore because we need that momentum. We need to keep pushing this through. Even if it's a case of, fine, they don't sell, worst case scenario, but it's as uncomfortable for them as possible being at this club and owning this club. For me, that is a victory because why should we let them do what they do so easily and just get away with it? Like, oh, yeah, fine. Even if West Ham go down, doesn't really matter to us. We've got a load of money from the sale of Upton Park. We've got a load of money that we've kept over from here, from there. Perfect. It doesn't really matter to us. That's my opinion of it, is the more the better.
Do you think that Sullivan, Gold, and Brady are relieved there are no fans in the building right now? Like, let's say that second goal goes in against Newcastle. Do you think it's a Burnley times 10 if fans are at that game? Or do you think they need the money so desperately that they want the people there? I think it's a bit of a catch-22 for them, if I'm honest.
I think they are delighted there's not people there. Because you imagine if what has happened with the Dean Garner situation, the fact that we know there were protests outside the ground pre-lockdown, it would have been a perfect excuse for a protest outside of the ground. I think they're delighted. And I remember reading somewhere that they are quite glad that there's no fans there. And I think sort of the podcasts I listen to and stuff have kind of alluded to that. I know what you mean kind of catch 22 was, but I think they've got to be happy that they don't have fans breathing down their neck, so to speak.
Yeah, because I can only imagine, like I just said, that Jeff Hendrick goal goes in. It was a bit like that third goal against Burnley. I think it would have been hell in that stadium. I think there would have been severe riots if they thought it was bad before. I know they've kind of restructured their area to where it's not as easy to get to for fans. I do think they have to be. Let's put it this way. I don't think this COVID lockdown could have come at a better time for them. But then you could argue, I don't know, because it's like it makes you wonder if the COVID stuff didn't happen, do you think the owners would have spent this year, or is this just a convenient excuse? You know what I mean?
I think it's a convenient excuse. But one thing I will say is that, like, the fact that we as fans have to put pressure on our owners to spend money and to buy players, it's like, it's almost, imagine if there was a meter. The more the fans protest, the more money we spend. That, as a multi-million pound business to be run like that is an utter joke and shows how feeble as businessmen and women that they are. You imagine that? It's like, if we get 10,000 people at the protest, you know, we'll spend 20 million. If there's 20,000, we'll spend 40 million. It's almost like that because that's what happened after the Burnley that summer. And it was said that, you know, the fan pressure made them want to spend money. No, you should have had list of targets drawn up, areas that you wanted to work in, infrastructure that you wanted increasing, repairing and putting up, and regardless of what the fans said. You should be strong with your decisions, but with them, they don't even have the intelligence for that. They're so crippled by it all that they don't know what to do now. I genuinely believe that, but they're so stubborn that they don't want to relinquish control at the same time. So they're stuck in this, almost stuck in the same way we are, is that they don't want to relinquish control, but there's nothing they can do that. They've got nowhere else to hide.
Just crazy times. And then you every morning, it seems every morning recently, I open up Twitter and I go on. The first thing I see is a clip from TalkSport. More times than not, it's the pundits on there defending the owners. And what annoys me is it's these people who have no idea about West Ham are coming on and just slating the fans. Like, every morning it seems like, I think today was Simon Jordan. Simon Jordan has gone back when he was at Crystal Palace. I think he publicly said he does not like David Gold and or David Sullivan and dealing with West Ham. I think he's, and now this morning I've come on here and say He says, oh, I don't know what the West Ham fans are whining about. They're always moaning about something. They've done this, this, and this. It really winds me up. And I try not to quote, tweet, like it, do anything. I don't like to even click on it because I don't like giving TalkSport the views. And all they're trying to do, all TalkSport are trying to do, is to wind fans up and get them to do exactly what all West Ham fans do. Quote tweet that tweet and then direct more people onto that video and get more clicks to their website. That's all they're trying to do. So I at all costs, I try not to bite on it. And so many of our fans just bite at the first. But I will say it is annoying hearing all of these people come on. And I will say there have been a few. I think Andy Goldstein and Adrian Durham have both come out in defense of West Ham fans. And I know Kieran Dyer's gone on there and publicly said it. Or not Kieran Dyer, Trevor Sinclair. I don't know why I get those two confused for some reason. Not even in the same era, Trevor Sinclair. But anyway, you know, it is frustrating. I mean, do you put any stock into what comes out of TalkSport's mouth, or is it just crap?
It's all nonsense. Total and totally ridiculous opinions designed to inflame people to ring up and be like, no, this isn't true. What I will say on it is it's almost as if you're not a top six club. You've got no reason to complain. Why would you complain? Ridiculousness, all of it. I mean, respect to Trevor Sinclair, because he's probably the only ex-player I've actually come out and seen and has been like, GSBL, none of this is good enough.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them do work for the club or have ties to the club still and are kind of scared to speak up, whereas Trevor's none of this is good enough. And I've got a huge amount of respect for that. All of the other stuff, people like Jim White and Simon Jordan, it's all nonsense. What experience have they got as a match-going fan? They're both probably millionaires or got a lot of money. Well, Simon Jordan definitely is. Don't know what it's like to have a season ticket. Don't really know what it's like to have a hard time. And we were like, why would you complain? The fans are just moaning. On the way we look at their Premier League club, why does it matter? They're always moaning about something. So, we're always moaning about something because we've had a decade of a terrible, terrible ownership and everyone's had enough. And if they actually did their research, and even did their research in the sense of looking at and going, well, Golden Solomon have done X, Y, and Z. But they don't. They just say, oh, you shouldn't complain. I'd have it at the borderline. That's an opinion. Like, you can't tell someone they're wrong for an opinion. You can argue against it, but that opinion can't be wrong. So at the very least, you could try and have an intellectual debate or an argument or whatever about it. But for them, it's just like, no, this is just going to wind everyone up, and that's what it's designed to do.
Yeah, I mean, even when they're saying good stuff, like when Adrian Durham comes out and says he has sympathy for West Ham fans, I mean, even that, I mean, they're just trying to drive people to click on their stuff and listen to their stuff. I mean, so it's hard for me to put any stock whatsoever. And I talked about it with X last week about Jim White, and there are reasons to Jim White saying the things that he does. And it's simply, if you're in David Sullivan's good books, you're going to get the news. You're going to get that scoop, and you're going to get the transfer deadline day scoops that you need to inflate your views and your listens. It makes total sense.
I'm pretty sure someone's made a whole website out of it. Oh. A whole news website out of that.
Yeah.
100%. Geez. But that's the thing, is that's fine if that's the game, but at least provide evidence. Don't just say, like, I have no issue with it. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. At the very least, I have seen people that have that relationship with the board, but they provide evidence, and yeah, everyone will tear it apart, but at the very least, they're trying to have a reasonable argument and a reasonable opinion, whereas Jim White is just someone that I think is detested by most football fans. I mean, once he said, why can't you support two football teams, and said that, why can't you just switch football teams and stuff, and it's like, yeah, you're obviously just so disconnected and being so inflammatory that there's no point of even taking what you're saying because it's all nonsense.
Yep, I'm just trying to say something controversial to wind people up.
Yeah, exactly, Brolin. I try not, a lot similar to you, I just try not to give it any.
It's just so frustrating when the West Ham fans do bite. I will say it's hard not to bite when you see it, and you're just taking it at face value for what it is, and you think it's ludicrous, and you think it's stupid, and why would anyone say that? but you just can't feed into the machine, in my opinion, and I try not to, so I don't. All right, we'll move on now. I think that's enough talk sport. I can't stand talking about talk sport for more than 2 minutes anyway. But just came through now. It looks like as of 5:30 p.m. Eastern, which is literally 10 minutes ago, and this is not, I want to make this clear, this is not confirmed by X or anyone affiliated with the West Ham Way. This has come through on The Guardian from Jacob Steinberg, and he says the U.S. consortium sees second offer of £400 million for West Ham rejected but planned third bid. So interesting stuff coming through there. That does sound promising. I will say, according to X and the West Ham Way, he says no formal bid has been launched. So that means there's no legal... Legally, you have to go through some sort of process to make a formal bid. So I'm thinking maybe this is like a handshake offer, like with Golden Sullivan that was rejected. I don't know. But I tell you what, £400 million is a pretty damn good offer. And I would say, according to what I can make out, that is pretty close to what the club is actually valued at in today's market. So what are your thoughts on this? This is exciting, right?
I think you're right in terms of takeovers and like nuts processes. So like you've seen the Newcastle one that went on for, what, like 6 months?
Newcastle
fans. Understanding was proof of funds. Was that not when you put the bid in? Like, is it not that you negotiate a price over a table, the price is then agreed, then you then put in the offer that is accepted with the proof of funds, and then it's accepted and you go through the whole process?
Yeah.
Which is what I understood that as. So, yes, technically there's not an offer, but it kind of is in terms of where they are at in that negotiation table, is the way that I've interpreted this. Again, we haven't heard X's opinion on this, and I imagine on the podcast this week, we're certainly going to hear like a lot more. I reckon that he's definitely would have done some digging. It's really, really tricky because you don't really want to
Get your hopes up. Exactly. You don't want to get your hopes up.
It's the first time we've probably seen this in 10 years where someone is talking, well, it's in the media that someone is trying to buy the club, which is a strange time for us all. If you actually look at it that way. I mean, I would love to. I would love it to be true. So give it someone else a chance with the club, see what they can do with it, and inject a bit of fresh air, a bit of hope back into.
Can I ask you something?
Why
is it Americans get such a bad rap for being football owners? Because you see, I've seen a lot of people saying It's crazy we're getting excited for American owners. Like, American football owners are the worst things that ever could happen. Do you have an opinion as to why American owners get such a bad rap with the European football community?
I've got a perfect counter to this. I do, and I have seen that. But Thai owners, right, get a bad rap as well. Thai owners own Leicester. American owners get a bad rap. Who is it? Is it what are their names that own Liverpool?
Not the Glazers. It's the Boston based. I can't think.
It's completely escaped my head now.
Yeah,
I've heard it so many times. So yeah, don't get me wrong. For every Liverpool owner, you get a Randy Lerner, a Glazer. It's a takeovers. All of that sort of things is case by case. We won't actually know until they take over the club because, to be honest, we have no idea where this money is from because there's no one at this point in time even knows who's fronting that takeover.
Yeah, it's just rumored, like in this article, it's just rumored that it says the U.S. buyers are involved in U.S. sport. I've seen various rumblings that it could be Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys. And if that's the case, I don't know how I'm going to feel about that because I can't stand Jerry Jones. Now, if he comes in and puts money where his mouth is and invests and turns us around, I will change my tune on that. But, yeah, you're right. We have no idea who this owner is. All I've seen is that it's rumored to be an NFL-linked person. But who knows what that means, really.
It is really, really tricky time because you actually just do not know anything about it until 5 years down the line, especially people that haven't bought football clubs before.
Yeah.
That's where it's just a complete unknown. If they've not owned, sports is sports. I think football is such a niche business because it is utter madness. So you don't know anything until they're actually probably 2 years into the club.
And
you're starting to see what their plans are. And at this point in time, I'd rather take that risk with someone else.
Yeah, I agree.
It's either one of two things. It's either the consortium are leaking this to the media because they want to put pressure on the board to sell, purely for the base that they know that there is massive pressure against them from fans, that they're people that are control freaks and they need to be pushed to relinquish control. And that basically that now all of us know about it, all of these protests are going to intensify because our whole argument will just come down to you've got a very reasonable offer, take your money and get out the club. Or it's the club themselves are leaking this sort of thing over a consortium that is complete balderdash because at the moment we're talking about a takeover. We're not talking about the fact that, you know, all of the interest payment came out in the media this week. We're not talking about the fact that we're not signing anyone in the media at the moment. We're not talking about the fact that, you know, we've got thumped first game of the season and their incompetence has led to this. Those are the two options.
Yeah. And
it's either one of those two.
Crazy times we're living in right now. It just, you don't know what to believe or what to think. It's hard.
I mean, it's very, very odd that this is now come out a day later that firstly there was a £350 million bid rejected, and then a day later, £400 million being rejected. Like, it's honestly been in the space of a day. So something has happened over the past 3-4 days that this has been leaked out, because that seems really, really weird to me. Like,
this article is from a reputable source in The Guardian. I mean, depends on what stock you put. But I believe Jacob Steinberg is a West Ham fan, is he not?
He is. And I mean, this has now gone, again, an awful, awful newspaper, but this has now gone to The Sun. So The Sun have just said now, West Ham have rejected a second offer of $400 million to buy the club from an American consortium. So it is very, very strange. I don't personally really understand it, because if they're talking about valuation at the moment, why would in a day a £50 million valuation be leaked out, and why would that difference have come out over the space of 24 hours? Because it's apparently that the first bid was on the first week of August, and at the end of August they put in $400 million and they're planning to come back. I mean, does someone see the momentum that's being built and is trying to feed that fire? Or is someone trying to distract from everything that is going on and is trying to keep everyone looking at the takeover while, look at the right hand, don't look at the left hand? That's what I can't tell.
It's interesting. Let's move on. We did just get finished listening to, I didn't get to watch it, I don't think you really got to watch it either, but West Ham 3, Charlton 0. By all accounts, a decent performance, and I thought it was a decent lineup, but at the same time, I thought if you desperately wanted to win the game, the lineup didn't scream out that we were really going all out for it. It seemed like all the bench players, fringe players, plus Diop, and that was about it. So I had some conflicting thoughts, but apparently we were well played, and we didn't break too much of a sweat by all accounts. Seb Haller scored 2 goals, and then Felipe Anderson getting the other one. That's really good to see. I heard people saying in the first half he was crap and he looked like his old self, but if you get, I just want to get him going. At this point, if we can't sell him, I really want to get him going. And then we're going to move on to face the winner of the Leeds and Hull game, so we could get another matchup against Leeds this season. Would you have any thoughts on the Carabao Cup game?
We definitely needed that. I think the very least to give confidence to some of these players like Johannes and Johanssons. Apparently Masuaku played quite well as well.
And that might be his level. That might be his level is what I'm thinking.
At this point, I'd be willing to give him a try again. Even though we seem to go through a cycle of
every season.
But at this point, I'm just like, do you know what? Who cares anymore? We might as well, at the very least. Yeah, a pretty standard cup win. I think the test will probably be Leeds at home. I can't see Hull beating Leeds, but who knows? I think that's when we'll see kind of where we are.
And if we're actually going to have a bit of a cup run, depending on the side that he picks there, because Charlton are in utter disarray.
Yeah.
Have had like ownership problems.
Yep.
Like player problems, recently relegated. So
I have
really biggest challenge.
I've been calling it the worst run club in London derby is what I've been calling it. I think that's pretty accurate. Before we leave the Charlton game, I just wanted to say that, and I said it already, but I think Sebastian Haller has to start against Arsenal. I don't see how you don't play him at this point. I mean, in preseason he was banging in goals left, right, and center. Antonio was okay, but like, why aren't we just going to play Antonio in his normal position and play? We already talked about it. I don't want to harp on it, but I'm just reiterating my point. Sebastian Haller has to start against Arsenal. That's my opinion, and I think you share that opinion. And that's all I want to speak left on the Charlton game, because neither of us really got to see the game. And but one question I did want to ask you real quick: are you disappointed? Because you go home and away. And you go to most away games. Are you disappointed that you won't be able to go to Leeds this year?
Yeah, one of my friends is a massive Leeds fan. He's been a season ticket holder. He watched Leeds in the Champions League when he was younger.
Wow.
So he remembers seeing them in the Champions League, and then has had 15, 16 years at the depths of English football. And we've always said that, funny enough, since we've been mates, that we cannot wait for the day that we're both back in the, well, they're back in the Premier League and we get to play them home and away. So I'm absolutely kind about Leeds, because he's a proper like Yorkshire lad as well.
Yeah. I know it's been particularly hard on the fans who go home and away for this whole no fans in the stadium, because it is sad. Leeds is one of the best away days in the country by all accounts. I've never gotten to go, but it always sounds like it's terrific.
Yeah, I have done Leeds before when we were in the Championship a long time ago. It is a great old English stadium. How did it work when you went and saw your local team? Did they have distancing or?
So when I went, this was one of the games where so over here, it goes by state and county laws, so it's not a whole country. It's not like over there where the whole country gets put under the same set of rules. So in Kentucky, where Louisville is, they were allowing, I believe, 20 or maybe slightly less than 20% capacity. And then, yes, it was all distanced out. So you weren't closer than 6 feet to anyone in the stadium besides the people that you were with. And in this ground, I believe it's the south end of the stadium. I could be wrong. I don't know directions very well. But it's all safe standing. So, that ground is safe standing, which is terrific. I don't understand why England. Well, I do understand why. I mean, Hillsborough made people very, very against safe standing. But over here, all the new stadiums are having standing sections and safe standing, usually on one end of the ground. So standing, it's a lot easier to spread out. And it was great. I thought I wasn't closer then I felt comfortable being to someone, and we could spread out, and it was great. It was really, really good. I think as long as people are being safe, and everyone, you had to have your mask on. So about every 30 seconds, 2 minutes, somewhere in there, there was a usher or a steward coming by. And if he saw someone without a mask on, he would warn them and say, get your mask back on. It's working here. I will say we are a country that's not handled the coronavirus very well. So who knows if you can believe anything that we're doing over here, but it seemed to work with us over there in Louisville.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to the Q&A. We did get a couple questions here that I thought were good. The first one, well, this is more of a comment. This one's from WHUFC USA, and they said, why bother? We are shit until hashtag GSB out, maintain radio media silence. So obviously he's making his opinions felt on that. Wobbly Knee at Dodgy Patella asked, which three teams will finish below us this season, if you think three teams will finish below us at all. So I'll start with this one. I do think West Brom and Fulham have the potential to be worse than us. So if I had to pick at least two, they are two that I would pick to finish potentially below us. A third one, I don't know that I can pick a third team if I'm honest right now. I mean, I pick us to finish 16th or 17th. I don't know that there is a third team that's worse than us. I will say there's usually one random team every year that kind of gets sucked down in there that's like doesn't make a lot of sense. Crystal Palace maybe, but Crystal Palace have made some decent signings, so I don't know that I can put them in that boat. Southampton maybe, but I think they're going in the right direction. It's really hard for me to say, but at this point, I'm not changing my pick after one game. I think that would be naive, but I don't know that I can give you a third team without making me sound silly that it's going to finish below us, besides West Brom and Fulham. So I don't know. You seem pretty down in the dumps, like maybe we're going down. Are there three teams worse than us? It's hard to say, isn't it?
I'd push West Brom, Fulham. But you could see one of those finishing above. It wouldn't surprise me to see one of them finish above us. I mean, at the very least, they're teams that...
Villa,
managers,
maybe?
I quite Villa? Like the managers. No, I think Villa will be fine this year. I think they've invested quite well. Got Watkins. They've looked at the issues they had last season. They've got that. Martinez from Arsenal, who looks like a really good goalkeeper. Watkins, who scored goals for Brentford.
He scored tonight against play? Oxford? Burton.
Burton. You've got Grealish has signed a new deal. They're trying to sign new players all the time. Because funnily enough, they spent about 100 million. It didn't really work out for them. But they didn't spend three years saying, oh, we spent 100 million this one summer, so we can't spend any more money. They just said, right, we made mistakes in the investments. They sacked one of the recruitment people, replaced him, and said, right, here's the money. Let's go again. Let's stay up and keep persevering. Funny how that works, isn't it, Baldy?
Yeah, it is. Anyway, let's move on to the next question. So both of us are saying we don't know that there are three teams worse than us, is what we're saying. All right, this one's from Eric Hegerness. Apologies, Eric, if I mispronounced your surname there. That's Eric. That's at Eric Live Out Loud. And he says, Moyes put out the same squad that produced results 6 weeks ago. Do you think that the fact that we were in a relegation battle last year lit a fire under the squad to produce despite players being played out of position? And second part, can we find an identity without the threat of relegation? To answer your question, Eric, yeah, I do think that the relegation battle heaped pressure on them. But at the same time, I don't think we have a squad capable of handling a relegation battle. I think we have a lot of divas and overpaid players that aren't up for the relegation battle. So I will agree with some of them, like Antonio and Suchek and guys like that. Rice seemed up for it, but I don't think it lit a big enough fire under them, because if that were the case, we would have been safe long before we were. And can we find an identity without the threat of relegation? I don't know that we're going to be able to find an identity anyway. I don't think David Moyes has an identity. I don't see us being able to figure out an identity, relegation threat or not. I mean, I just don't see it happening under this manager and with the players that we have. I don't know. What do you think, Liam?
I don't think that it kind of did light a fire under the belly, because like I said, we won three games out of 18, so we almost just sort of limped over the line in terms of the relegation fight. I think the performance has got a little bit better. Again, I think we'll find out actually what this full season to kind of see what the squad's mentality is, and you would always argue, do you really need a relegation battle to light the fire under you? Surely you should not. You're a professional. He's playing for a great football club. Should you not be putting in 100% regardless of the situation? And then in terms of identity, I don't think we will undergo, even if the relegation battle happened, purely for the fact that we're under Golden Sullivan, because I don't think they've put in an identity ever. But again, we chop and change managers, scouting staff, players constantly. There's no continuity that we can build an identity, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. This next one's from Adam Liddell, at Adam Liddell 11. He said, realistically, given our schedule, we will be bottom three at Christmas or at Halloween, assuming that that's the case. Who is our manager come November? Personally, I would take odds on Kevin Nolan. I don't see Moyes staying very long. I'll start with this one, unless you want to start, Liam. Do you mind me going?
Go for it, yeah.
I think we will finish with David Moyes regardless of if we're relegated or not. If they are crying poverty so much that they can't buy players, they're not going to want to pay off a manager's contract, even if he's not making that much. So I really, really don't think that they're going to sack David Moyes this year unless, I don't know, maybe by New Year's we still are on rock bottom and on 5 points or less. I mean, I think it would take an absolute, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but I think it would take a horrendous, horrendous, horrendous run until New Year to get Moyes out of the job, because I think A, they like him, B, he'll do what they said that they say and go with whatever they throw at him, and C, they're cheap and they don't want to do it. So I don't want Kevin Nolan managing this club anyway. He was not great at Notts Forest or at Notts County, excuse me. And wasn't great at Leighton Orient either. I mean, is that what we want? I mean, I know people have this infatuation with ex players, and they always seem to want ex players back as a manager. I don't want Kevin Nolan managing a relegation battle in the Premier League. I don't know. That just doesn't sound appetizing to me. So I say David Moyes is in the job at Halloween or Christmas. I really believe that. What do you think?
I think he's spot on. I said Nolan is a caretaker manager because they'll get. Kevin Nolan's never managed in the Premier League. The board can just go, cool. Well, we're going to give you a contract. You'll sign it, whatever we offer you. I honestly, because I think no one else will work with him either. I do. You've got a very good point that even if we go down, he might still be there. But it would not surprise me to see him sacked and then bringing Nolan by Christmas at all as a caretaker manager role or a 2 year role or whatever. It's a short term deal purely for the fact that he'll probably even cheaper than Moyes. He can take all the flat because they go, well, he's never, you know, it's not us that we gave Moyes a job, we gave Nolan a try, it didn't work. Both of those scenarios I can see happening broadly, definitely.
Yeah. I don't know that they're going to have the bollocks to get rid of David Moyes. I don't know. And maybe it's only to save their own skin, and that's usually how most managers go, I guess, but I don't know. I don't see him going anywhere. We did have some other questions, but we've gone a little long here, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up here. One thing I did want to mention is I want to send my thoughts out to our dear friend Andy Reid, who sadly, his father passed away last night. He's one of our best mates, and I'm absolutely devastated for the guy. So I just wanted to make sure he knows that we're thinking about him. I texted him earlier today, so I know he knows that, but I want you to know that we're thinking about you, buddy, and I'm really sorry for your loss.
Yeah, I'll echo that as well.
Yeah, it's, you hate seeing that. I know what it's like to lose a parent personally, and it's just the worst. So, Andy, I love you. I'm thinking about you, and just keep your chin up. That's it. Liam, thank you so much for joining us this week. I know Tony really appreciates it. And Tony, I'm also thinking about you, buddy, because I know we're going through some hard times right now. But guys, real quickly, if you want to follow us on Twitter, follow us at West Ham Way US Pod. If you want to follow Liam on Twitter, follow him at Ward Liam. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Brawley Darbin. And also, if you want to please go on to iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating and review. We really would appreciate it if you could write us a nice little review. That means a lot. Signing off from St. Louis, Liam in Wokingham. Is that where you still are, Liam? Are you in Wokingham?
Yeah, Wokingham, yeah.
Okay, signing off from Wokingham over in England. We really appreciate it, guys. And tune in next week. Hopefully we'll be talking to you after a result against Arsenal. But sadly, I don't know if that's going to be the case. Anyway, signing off. See you, guys.